Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the General Data Protection Regulation Act of the EU and how it's affecting free speech and social media. We're also talking about things like the Manafort trial and Trump Jr.'s problems. I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. I hope we can get it all in. I do want to remind you this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate our host's co-host, if you will. He's our European editor, writ large, in London, England. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. And Thomas, good afternoon, or actually good evening to you as we begin this interview. How are you doing there in the United Kingdom in London?
Very nicely indeed. Thank you, Lockwood.
And now, what's the weather?
Cooler. Very pleasant. I'd say low to mid-70s. It's dropped a bit. We had a thunderstorm last night, and it's cooled everything down, and it looks like it might be very pleasant, sunny, maybe slightly overcast, for the next week or so.
Okay, very quickly.
Which is just how I like it.
Very quickly, I want to go into a quick question here. We're coming into the month of August and September. Obviously, we're talking seasonal change here in the U.S. Others may call it climate change. But anyhow, seasonal change. We're looking at the development of fall. What is August and September like there in Great Britain?
It varies. I mean, they often say about Britain, we don't have climate. We just have weather.
Okay.
We don't have seasons. We
right.
just have weather.
And
we have had Augusts which have been hot. This happens to be one of those Augusts. We have Augusts which have been cold. Temperatures in the 50s. It usually, I would say, it drops down to the 60s in August.
Okay.
That would be the normal, and it starts getting wetter.
Okay.
But this August is supposed to be a lot warmer than others. It's supposed to be quite cool for a few days, and then they're talking about the temperature going back up again, and the Indian summer extending on into October.
Oh, very interesting. Well, probably happening here as well. All right. I'm just curious about the weather there in the United Kingdom and London, particularly where you're located. Tom, I want to go into something that is percolating significantly along the internet here and in the area of communications. We've got a few minutes. I want to chat with you about the topic of access to the internet and the issue of hate speech. We chatted briefly, and I'm just going to bring it up. The general data and protection regulations there in the United Kingdom, we're seeing new focus and concerns associated with this digital media aspect. And of course, in the GDPR, it requires that companies assure that any email communications with subscribers has been approved, and the issue of selling the data, and there's some concerns there as well. And I did note, and we chatted briefly off air, the impact this has had on expats who are not being able to get access to U.S. media, and such as the Los Angeles Times and other publications. They have just simply shut down their operations going to the European community. But this, it actually is part of an even bigger issue, and it has to do with the topic of internet protocol and the hot topic, hate speech. And we've got some interesting issues here. Tommy Robinson, for example, banned from Twitter, and of course he was arrested and imprisoned there in the UK for a variety of activities associated with, I think, religious issues. You can clarify that. We have the concerns related to Alex Jones here in the States, who arguably at times, now I read a story earlier today that Twitter has not banned him, but other internet resources have. And then yet we have the New York Times editorial staffer, Sarah Young, who posted a variety of anti-white male, anti-white female, and anti-cop postings, and she has not been banned, and in fact, the New York Times has not even taken her to task on this. So my question to you is, what's happening there in the European community? And like, quite frankly, connecting it to GDPR, that's the General Data and Protection Regulations, what's happening in the United Kingdom and Europe related to this whole issue of hate speech? And we can bring up Tommy Robinson in the process. So I'm going to open the floor to you. What's happening there, Tom?
Well, let's start. There's several things. Let's start with Tommy Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy Robinson was sent to prison not for hate speech. Let's make this absolutely
okay.
clear.
All right.
He was sent to prison for contempt of court.
Right.
And what happened was, it was two separate incidents. The first incident, he was sitting in the court videoing the court proceedings, making a video of it, and streaming that video live on his Facebook page. Now, this is against the law. I think it's against the law in the U.S. as well. He was spotted by the judge, who simply said, I ought to send you to prison now for contempt of court, but I won't. But if you put a foot wrong again, you're getting a suspended sentence now. If you put a foot wrong again, you are going to prison. Okay? And on top of that, I don't want to see you in this courtroom. Now, so he left the courtroom. He then, a few days later, was seen doing a video outside of a courtroom and saying things which could be seen as prejudicial to the trial. Now, there were several things. There were reporting restrictions on the trial, and these were because, one, it was a very emotional, intensely charged trial given the subject matter. It was sexual grooming by Pakistanis. And it involved teenage girls. Under British law, you cannot name or identify in any way the identity of a minor. They have to be protected by law. And he was doing that. On top of that, it had become known that his activities were going to be used by the defense attorneys to file for a mistrial. So he was immediately holed up again before the judge, who just immediately sent him to prison.
Right.
She said, you have broken the previous order, well, and you're going to prison. He got out basically on a technicality,
mm-hmm.
and he still faces a retrial. So he's not free. He's out on bail.
Well, but still,
make that absolutely clear. He has not been found not guilty.
Well, no, that's fine. The kicker here, Tom Arms of Look
this
Ahead.
This is not a case of free speech, though. Everyone else is trying to make this a case of free speech.
Why not?
And it is not.
Why not?
It is a contempt of court.
But he's being denied access to Twitter. They've kicked him off. They called shadow banning is another term. What has that got to do with the court? I mean, that's one thing for the court.
Okay. The reason is because of this issue of hate speech, and really this comes down to, when is free speech an abuse of free speech? And here we get into what I also think of as the Alex Jones case.
But here's the question. Okay, we're going to get back to this. We're going to come to a break here in a few minutes with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. The important aspect of this, Tom, and I want to go back to this with Alex Jones here in a few moments in the New York Times and others, is there a newfound, and we chatted about GDPR very quickly because we've got to go to a break. Is there a newfound desire among the European community, that particularly the governments, to take control of access to information?
No.
You don't think so?
No, it's not. It is not a desire to take control of it. It's desire to protect minorities and privacy or privacy.
Okay, we're going to get
privacy
back.
Or privacy.
We're going to get back to that. We'll get back to that in a moment here on Look Ahead News with our guest from LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, Tom Arms, with Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're chatting here for a few minutes about stories appearing in the press and particularly on the internet. And we were chatting a few moments ago about Tommy Robinson, who has been banned on Twitter. We've got the topic of Alex Jones. I mentioned earlier also, interestingly enough, Tom, New York Times editorial staffer. She's a new arrival to the New York Times, Sarah Young. And her comments related to, anti-white, anti-white female, that's anti-male, anti-white female, anti-cop remarks that are, well, quite frankly, come under the category of pretty harsh and maybe even hate speech. And you said a few moments ago that this is not a matter of concern insofar as controlling the media, but you said controlling hate speech. And my question to you, Tom.
I don't agree with New York Times.
Okay.
I think New York Times is wrong. I would say that what New York Times has said, that this is her view in the past, and she said that she would not be writing these things or writing in that way in the future. Now, I still think that the New York Times was wrong to employ her in the past, knowing what her views have been in the past, because I think you can only judge people by their past actions. You can't judge people by their future actions because you don't know what those are going
to
be.
All right. Now, let's go to this in relationship to what's happening on the internet. And by the way, is there a possibility that the European community, because we've already seen this, and I mentioned a moment ago, the GDPR, that's the General Data Protection Regulations, and by the way, I got to commend you, I knew the abbreviations, I did not remember the proper nomenclature of what the abbreviations meant, but here we've already seen the European community take charge of information on the internet. You mentioned we want to chat about Alex Jones, who also, and now I'm seeing conflicting stories. He has not been banned from Twitter. But yes, we're talking about folks. There's no question in my mind. Alex Jones is way off the rails. But how do you pull the line? And you said it's to protect an issue associated with minors. And I think you mentioned the issue of religion and my land in a secular community, which Europe has become. Where does your religion become a concern?
I didn't say religion. I said minority groups.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
and I think, you know, I know that there are a lot of people in your listening audience who would disagree with me, but Islam is a minority group in Europe. It's like 5% of the population.
Okay.
Which makes them a minority. And I think that, you know, if you have people who actually go out and incite other people to hate or to participate in violent acts, or anything like that, I don't think that should be allowed.
Okay.
Well, and that is the purpose of, a lot of this. A lot of these regulations, a lot of the hate speech crime.
All right. Are we going to see more of this in Europe?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I think you're probably going to see it in the States too.
Two interesting things here. Bring it back to your community. Let's talk first about Nigel Farage. He was on TV last night, and his proposal is that the internet community, particularly the providers, that's Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, whatever, they should not be perceived as, quote, utilities, but really perceived as publishing companies if, in fact, they're going to control any kind of distribution of messages such as, Tommy Robinson or Alex Jones or anyone else. What's your opinion? Nigel Farage.
It makes me physically painful to say this, but I agree with Nigel Farage that, you know, these are not just utilities. These are publishing platforms, mm-hmm. much the same as a newspaper or television station or television network or radio. They are publishing platforms. And therefore, they should be subject to the same rules and regulations involving libel and hate speech and everything else as anyone else. Otherwise, they become a platform for anarchy.
Mm-hmm. And they have become a platform for anarchy.
Yes, and anarchy is not good.
Well, it's a change agent, but you're absolutely right. It is not good. My question for
you. We agreed on that, aren't we? Yeah,
definitely. Tom, the question I have for you is, what are the possibilities? Because I will say that the, let's just pick on Great Britain, the United Kingdom, and their press regulations, which are pretty severe, pretty strong. Might we see, again, it's going to be interesting to see how this applies, but the United Kingdom stepping up and saying, okay, Google, you are now a publishing company. Is that conceivable?
Yes. Yes, I think it's very conceivable. And I personally would think that's exactly the right move.
Let's talk about another issue. It's kind of associated with this, and it's we're going to get into two of these items. One,
it creates a lot of practical problems for Google.
Oh, it does. And
it would really hit their profits. But, you know, they're making a lot of profits, so they can afford it.
There's no question. Of course, they have been fined by the European community significantly. Let's talk here for a moment about bring it back to again to your home community. Well, your adopted home community. I just want to remind folks, Tom Arms is an expat. So he is still a U.S. citizen and living now almost full time. Well, for the past 30 some odd years in London.
40 some odd years.
40 years. Oh, you're aging. I'm glad I'm much younger than you. Tom, with, of course, Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Boris Johnson. Apparently, the Prime Minister has demanded that Mr. Johnson apologize. And by the way, did not Mr. Johnson, leave Mrs. May's administration?
Yes, he left over Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
And he has recently, there's been a dispute in Denmark. Denmark has just passed a law against the wearing of burqas,
mm-hmm.
Joining several other European countries. And this, of course, has raised the issue here in the UK. And Johnson wrote an article. He didn't actually come out and say that burqas should be banned, but he wrote an article saying that he didn't like burqas. It made the wearers look like bank robbers and letterboxes, which means mailboxes.
Right, right, right.
Which, you know, you've got to give the man credit. I mean, you know, that is such a wonderful turn of phrase. You know, he's a brilliant writer and a brilliant speaker. But, now, you know, I would defend his right to say it, except for one thing.
Uh-huh.
This man wants to be the prime minister.
Well.
And as the prime minister, he has to represent all communities. And if you go around insulting different segments of your community, it sort of makes it difficult for you to represent them.
I guess you can represent them, but not in a specific agenda item. I mean, you can represent them on the broader topics of freedom.
By saying things like that, let me just say the Muslim community is absolutely furious with him.
Hmm.
They are absolutely furious. And so he has lost their support.
Well, then his chances of becoming prime minister have been diminished, have they not?
Well, not necessarily, because as we know, it's not always that way. As I said, the Muslim community in this country is probably under 5%. It's probably 5% in Europe as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, it's more like 3%, I think, which leaves 97%.
Well,
in order for him to become prime minister, he has to become leader of the Conservative Party, which is by definition conservative.
Right.
And so, you know, he could become prime minister. But once he gets to that position, he really has to represent not just the Conservative Party, not just his followers in the Conservative Party, but he has to be seen as representing everyone in the country.
Okay.
And he is alienated a significant minority.
All right. Well, we're going to get back to this and a few other items in the European community. I want to go back here. We're going to take a quick break. I want to go back to the coverage of events here in the States with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as just as a reminder, this portion of Viewpoints has been pre-recorded to accommodate our foreign editor's sleeping schedule. It's nearly midnight where he is in London. So right after this break, we're going to chat about events here in the States. You're listening, of course, to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from lookaheadnews.com. Free speech is a cornerstone of representative democracy. Abuse of free speech is one of the biggest threats to that cornerstone. This week we have three examples of the dangers of the abuse of free speech. Alex Jones of InfoWars, English Defence League founder Tommy Robinson, and former British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson. Let's start with Alex, who's currently in a Texas court defending the indefensible. On December the 14th, 2012, mentally disturbed 20-year-old Adam Lanza broke into Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. He shot dead 20 6- and 7-year-olds and 6 of the school's staff. This is a fact. The police verified it. Inquests have been held. The bodies have been seen, grieved over, and buried. Wrong, according to Alex Jones. The children never died. The grieving parents are actors hired by the anti-gun lobby to deny Americans their gun-toting Second American rights. A proportion of Jones's audience believe him. Enough that grieving parents have been forced to move house because of harassment and even death threats from InfoWar viewers. Those parents are now suing Jones for defamation and slander. Sandy Hook is not the only wild conspiracy peddled by Jones. According to him, the UN is about to flood America with 600 million immigrants. Michelle Obama is a man. Hillary Clinton is a demon-possessed extraterrestrial. Robert Mueller is at the center of a child sex ring. 9/11 was staged by the federal government. The U.S. government controls the weather and uses it as a weapon against alt-right political opponents. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia was murdered, and many more. It is easy to dismiss Jones as an irrelevant crackpot conspiracy theorist. The problem is that he is a crackpot conspiracy theorist followed by 6 million people who's been publicly endorsed by the President of the United States. Alex Jones must know that he's lying. Why does he do it? Well, the answer is simple. To make money. The more outrageous the lies, the more people who watch his show, which he used to sell dubious pseudo-medical products, which, according to Celebrity Net Worth, have helped him accumulate assets in excess of $10 million and a drawer full of Rolex watches. Jones justifies his false and vitriolic broadcast with America's First Amendment. I am certain that the Founding Fathers did not intend their groundbreaking free speech law to be used for the propagation of lies for the purpose of accumulating wealth. Britain also has free speech laws, although the international alt-right is claiming that the treatment of Tommy Robinson demonstrates the UK is abandoning that traditional English liberty. But let's be clear. Tommy Robinson was not locked up for racist comments or hate speech. He was sent to prison for contempt of court. His reports of a gang rape and sexual grooming involving Pakistani men was threatening a mistrial and breached laws protecting the identity of minors. Furthermore, he has not been found innocent of contempt. He has been released on bail pending a retrial because the Lord Chief Justice Lord Burnet said that the sentence was rushed and flawed. He did not rule Robinson not guilty. The case of Boris Johnson is different. His is not so much a case of what he said as who said it. It is an open secret that the Brexiteering former British Foreign Secretary wants to be Prime Minister and is busily plotting to achieve that goal as soon as possible. Last week, Denmark followed France, Belgium, and Austria in banning the burqa, the head-to-toe, shapeless black cloth worn by some Muslim women. Johnson actually defended the right of Muslim women to wear it, but he then went on to insult them by saying that they look like bank robbers in letterboxes. I think he's right, but he's wrong to have said it. Elected officials are elected to serve the entire community, not just those who voted for them. Boris Johnson's comments under the guise of free speech have exposed him as divisive and thus unfit for high office.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Joining us from London, England. Yes, it is nearly midnight where he is. So this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, which I do appreciate. Tom, we've chatted about a variety of things, predominantly in your fair country of Great Britain and the European community. I want to bring it back to the States for a few moments. The stories associated with the continuing saga of Russia and politics in the United States, and particularly the recent trials for Paul Manafort and company. How is that being covered in the European community?
Oh, big. Both Manafort and the Trump Jr. Meeting at Trump Towers are being covered.
Wow.
A number of people have pointed out that the president has changed his story about what was discussed at Trump Towers.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, he starts off saying they discussed adoptions, and now he's saying, well, yeah, we did discuss dirt with Hillary. And so a number of commentators are saying, has this opened the can of worms related to perjury, obstruction of justice, the Logan Act, or not the Logan Act, but basically conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
The federal election laws, and so forth and so on. The Manafort trial, well, you know, it's moving along. Where it's been reported here, we've got Rick Gates up on the stand. It doesn't look good for Paul.
Oh, no.
Is how it looks so far.
Yeah, there's no question. And that it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. So, in essence, the saga, this is above the fold kind of coverage?
It varies. Some days you might get it on the front page, and other days it'll be buried inside on the world pages. It really
varies.
Depends.
Okay.
It's certainly every day one of the commentators, and I think commentators now are being read more than they have been in the past,
mm-hmm.
because you get hard news from the internet. One of the commentators every day is saying something about it.
Okay, you said something a moment ago, you get hard news from the internet. We'll see if that continues in light of the fact that the concerns associated with hate speech, as we talked about earlier. All right, I want to move on to a few other items. Since you brought up President Trump, let's talk about the topic of Iranian sanctions and what's happening there in the European community, because Europe has relations outside of the U.S. with Iran. So what's happening there?
Well, and the European Commission has said
mm-hmm.
that any companies doing business with Iran can continue to do business with Iran.
Ooh.
And if they lose their business with the U.S., the EU will compensate them.
Wow.
They will subsidize their doing business with Iran. Now, this dates back to a regulation in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
It has been attempted in other times, but it's never been successful. Because the amount of business which these companies would lose is so huge that they are doubtful, they're dubious about whether or not Brussels can compensate them for any lost business.
You know, that is sad in light of the fact that, of course, the European Union was trying to maintain some relations with the U.S. It is interesting that we're seeing stories here today, and it's late in the evening where you are. But we're seeing stories of continued unrest in Iran. And I'm wondering, do the sanctions play a role in this, in your opinion, or are you getting news of that?
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it that the sanctions are playing a role.
Wow.
The Iranian currency, the rial, has dropped in the last few weeks 50% against the dollar. Hmm. So this is pushing up inflation. It's making it very difficult for them to buy medicines,
mm-hmm.
Which, of course, are being affected by the sanctions. They can't sell their oil. So, you know, the value of the currency has dropped.
All right.
There are street demonstrations. People are calling death to the dictators.
Right.
You've got a situation in Iran, you know, it's a very much a divided country. The Shah did have a constituency of liberal-minded, secular-minded people
mm-hmm.
who supported him, a middle class. And these were not devout Muslims. They were people who were interested in being Western oriented,
right,
politically, economically, and everything else. They're still there. Well, they haven't gone away.
But
there were a lot of people also who were very, very religious. And what you've got, what you've had since 1979 is the religious people have been in the,
in the power, They've been in power. All right. I think this is an important story and we'll be watching with interest. I want to go back to the United Kingdom here for a moment and talk about the issue of the extradition of Russians. This is in relationship to the, I think it's called the Novichok. Am I correct on that? Novichok?
Yes, Novichok.
Novichok, which
is the poisoning of people in Salisbury.
Right. And these are predominantly folks who have a connection with, well, let's go right to the point, Vladimir Putin. In some fashion, they're critics of him. The United Kingdom is trying to extradite some Russians who they think are accountable for this.
Yeah. They haven't released the names. They haven't released the names, but they have let it be known in private briefings that they are intelligence agents.
Okay.
Who were seen... basically been traced through CCTV footage and everything else, mm-hmm. And are now back in Russia, and they are going to apply for their extradition. They won't get it.
Right.
No, they won't get it because they're, I think it's Article 15 of the Russian Constitution says no Russian citizen will be extradited to face trial in another country.
Without going into the detail here, my question to you is, what does this do to the relations with the United Kingdom and Russia? And let's go to Germany and the European community with Russia. Is this considerably a conflict that could enlarge?
It just ratchets up the dispute a bit more. Now, what it does, they're not going to get these people.
Right.
But... what happens is if they put in an application for their extradition, mm-hmm. their names go down on Interpol along with any DNA or any other information they have on them. And if they try to travel outside of Russia,
they
will
be
arrested. So they won't get them extradited. Now, I thought this would be of particular interest to you because you've got people who've been indicted by the Mueller investigation.
Right.
Who are Russians? If you would apply for their extradition, the same would apply. You wouldn't get them back. The Russians wouldn't send them, but they're stuck in Russia.
Well,
details would go down on Interpol,
right.
And if they tried to leave Russia, they could be arrested and extradited to the U.S.
I'm not sure if they've applied for extradition or not. But I'm just saying if they did. Okay. I want to move on to a few other items here very quickly. We're running out of time here in this segment. Let's talk about the issue for a moment on burqas in Europe. And you mentioned a moment ago Denmark. And then we've brought up the topic of the Muslim community, particularly their European community, in the Great Britain community, as being a minority group. What's the future of burqas and that particular element of their religion in the rest of Europe?
Well, you don't see that many of them.
Understood. But
I must confess... I mean, they're not everywhere,
but
they have now been banned in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
They've also been banned previously in the Netherlands, Austria, and France. And I should think that gradually it's going to spread throughout Europe.
Of course,
this becomes a religious thing and comes under hate speech.
That, exactly.
Should people be allowed
right.
to express themselves, their religion, by wearing whatever they want? And, Jewish women, Orthodox Jewish women, have to have their hair covered either by a wig or a scarf.
Mm-hmm.
There are, in fact, some fundamentalist Christians who
right.
say that a woman's hair should always be covered.
But this is not, the burqa is covering their face, not just...
I know. And there is a phrase in the Quran which it doesn't specifically say wear a burqa, but it says that you should cover everything but your eyes.
But before we get into the details, which are way too intense, let's talk about this very quickly because we've got to move on to other items. And that, and particularly related to English pubs. The topic has to do with what will the outcome be? Because one of the things we've paid close attention to, and is this a growth of populism in the European community in relationship to the refugees and the immigrant issue? Is this going to have any influence on that?
Oh, yes. Yes, it certainly spurs the anti-burqa movement. I mean, there's a big feeling. You know, burqas are a public statement about multiculturalism, and it feeds the anti-multiculturalism lobby when you see a woman in a burqa walking around the streets because it doesn't look right.
I understand that it feeds but my question is, while you're saying it feeds that, my question is, what is this going to do politically? Because we've only got about 2 minutes to go. What is this going to do politically?
It's difficult to say, Lockwood. I don't know. It just depends on a number of factors. I really couldn't say.
Okay. I was just curious. That's the big issue here. We're watching politics.
I'll think about that one, do a bit more research. We'll come back to it another time.
Okay. I'm very curious about that. Let's go to one item here before we go to the break. English pubs are closing? Excuse me?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, they are. In the last 6 months alone, you've had nearly 500 pubs close.
Where? Is it geographical? First question.
No, it's all over the place.
Why?
It's all over the place. What is happening? A few years ago, they lifted what were called the licensing laws. And the licensing laws were introduced in World War I. And the purpose for the licensing laws was to prevent people from getting drunk, especially those who worked in the munitions factory.
Right. Okay.
And blowing up the factories.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And so they were introduced during World War I. And they just carried on. But they abolished the licensing law, so pubs can now stay open as late as they want.
Mm-hmm.
But that has pushed up. It also means not only can the pubs stay open as late as they want, but licensing laws also applied to the supermarkets. And the supermarkets could only sell beer or wine, any alcoholic drinks, when the pubs sold theirs. Now they can sell them, and they're open almost 24 hours a day. And they're cheaper in the supermarket than in the pub. So people buy their alcohol, they take it home, and they drink it rather than going to the pub.
Tom, we're about to go to a break, but this is an important issue. A community, and it's not about the consumption of alcohol. It was a community meeting place. These pubs were important. That's where information was shared, where networks were developed, where communications occurred. I maybe overweight this issue, but I'm sympathetic. I'm sorry. I think the English pubs are something that are unique character of England and Ireland and Scotland and Germany as well. But these are unique communities, and that is unfortunate. Has it been described as such there?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, definitely. People are talking about the sad demise.
It is, and it's more than just a watering hole. It was a gathering point as well. As a matter of fact, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but sometimes many meetings are conducted in these pubs.
Oh, they still are. I'm going to a meeting in a pub tonight.
Oh, okay. We'll find out more about that. Of course, we're hearing from Tom as we pre-record this program. It's evening where it is, where he is now. It'll be midnight as this airs live here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're moving on with our conversation with him this afternoon. It's evening where he is, and we are pre-recording this, but it's a fairly early evening because he has to head to the pub where he has a meeting, or at least that's his excuse. He's going to a meeting. I'm sure that his wife Eileen is believing that as well. I do. I'm sure of it. Tom, I've got two items here. I want to wrap things up. We've got we'll end it with the French mayor offering doctors yachts, meals, and houses. I just want to headline that. The French mayor is offering doctors. I'm wondering what kind of doctors, yachts, meals, and houses. But before we go to that, you have a note here about NIMBYism, not in my backyard. And we have NIMBYs here in the United States. What's the NIMBYism there in the European community or in your area of interest?
Not in my backyard.
Yes, but what over what?
It's over what's called the Green Belt. Now, the Green Belt is literally a belt around the major urban areas, around the cities,
right.
A belt of greenland. It's farms, which since the end of Second World War, this belt has been protected.
Right.
People have not been allowed to build on it. And so you don't have the suburban sprawl that you have in a lot of American cities. You don't have shopping centers and things like that. You have instead open farmland around London and Manchester and Birmingham and places like that. But you also have a severe housing shortage.
Ah.
And so people are talking about giving up the Green Belt, which have been described as the lungs of London and Manchester and Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big debate now. And of course, the people who live in the Green Belt, the farmers and the people in the villages and things like that, right. are saying, not in my backyard.
Literally,
no, we need to protect the Green Belt.
Literally and figuratively, not in my backyard. That's interesting. All right. Well, we have NIMBYs here in the States as well. Let's talk about the last item here. French mayor offering doctors yachts, meals, and houses. First question, what kind of doctors?
GPs, general practitioners.
And what French mayor, because people are listening to this and are packing their bags right now. Where in
exactly.
France? Where in France?
That's why I raised it. It's a town in Normandy on the Atlantic coast called Bonnevic-Carteret,
okay.
to use my very poor French accent.
And by the way,
there is a shortage of GPs along the Atlantic coast. The GPs either work in Paris or in the south of France, where they can get a bit more money. Now, they don't get a huge amount of money on the Atlantic coast. We're talking about maybe $100,000, $150,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to attract a GP to his town, and they have not managed to get one, they are without a doctor, the mayor has said, he can have my yacht, he can have a house overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, and once a month, I'll buy him dinner for himself and his partner at a Michelin-starred restaurant in the town.
Just an observation. Bonnevic-Carteret, and of course, you know the county in which we're located is Carteret County. So I think there's probably a connection here. But I think more importantly, and no, it's not. I think it's having to do with an English lord, but that's beside the point. I think the fact that small communities, rural communities in Europe are having the same difficulty that's happening in rural America. That's a fascinating story.
Let me just say, in the neighboring town called Lagonache, the mayor has gotten together a group of actors to make a film, a sort of satire, in which the mayor passes a law saying no one is allowed to fall ill because there's no doctor to look after them.
I like that. We have that requirement here at the office. We don't let people. They have to give us at least 4 weeks' notice if they're going to be ill. The other aspect of this, and we wrap it up, national health care. What role does that play in France, for example? Do they have national health care?
They have national health care. Almost all of the European countries now have a form of national health care.
Does that in any way inhibit or dampen the interest on providing medical services or are doctors moving into areas?
No, I don't think it makes any difference. It's just that, you know, the south of France is a lot nicer place to live than the Normandy coast. Personally, I prefer the Normandy coast. And if I could just find that medical degree, I'd be off.
All right. Tom Arms, who's looking for his medical degree as we speak here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.